Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's. No, Ken, we don't have any special meetings or anything that I'm missing, right? None today? What happened? There's got to be a special meeting we have to have.
I'm sure we can find someone coming.
Would you please? You're falling down. We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session with the Mesa City Council for Thursday, June 20th, 2013. I would like to excuse Councilmember Summers and Councilwoman Higgins. Are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, Mayor.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Dean Higgins
Mayor,
will be joining us by
Summers,
phone.
I'm on the phone.
Oh, Summers here too?
Yeah, I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay. Good. Bad note. And the first item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on an update of the city's general plan, transportation plan, and transit plan. All three.
Good morning, Mayor and Council.
Let's get the button pushed here.
Thank you for this opportunity to be here again this morning, give you an update on where we are on our work on the general plan, transportation plan, and transit plan updates. We were last here back in March, just prior to our beginning our public outreach effort at that time, to go to each of the I-Mesa villages and give them presentations on the concepts we were developing and get their feedback. So we're here again to give you an update on some of the feedback we've received, some of the concepts and ideas that we're developing. Over the next couple of months, we'll be actively working to draft the plan, so we have a first draft of the plan ready in September for you to look at and take out to the public. So today we're looking for a discussion with the council, get your comments and feedback on the ideas that we're developing, make sure we're headed in the right direction so as we spend these next couple of months working to draft the plan that we're headed in the right direction. And again, because we're also updating the transit and transportation plans at the same time, we're including them in this presentation so you can see how we are working on these together. So just a little bit of quick background, some of these things we've talked about before. History of Mesa, we've grown rapidly. It's what we call a boom burb. It's a product of the rapid growth in the 1960 to 2000 range, very auto-oriented, very bedroom-oriented community. That's kind of where we are today. In our planning processes, typically in the past, in our current general plan, we've really focused on the different elements that go into a plan, the land use, transportation, housing, revitalization. We've pretty much looked at those as individual elements. With the update that we're working on now, we are trying to take a little bit different approach, really trying to think of this as a general plan, putting the general back in the general plan, keep it a little bit higher level. We know that we're working on sub-area plans, and we have the other specialized plans, such as the transit plan and transportation plan, that can really augment the general plan. So trying to keep the general plan more flexible, base it on character areas, and keep it more usable and useful of a document. The current plan, it's a good plan, covers the city very well, but it also, we feel, has so many policies and goals and things in it that you get lost in them. And so the idea is to keep the general plan on a more general level, a little bit more broad level.
If I hear you correctly, you're trying to reduce the number of regulations and rules?
We're not sure we can get there because it's so hard. You start working and just think of more exciting ones.
John. Okay.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Right? Thank you. Oh, okay.
We're trying.
What?
His goal is to reduce the number of goals.
Oh, the goal is to reduce the number of goals. I like that. Okay.
We have lots of policies that help us get to that goal.
Thank you.
So, again, focus really on what the key goals are and those related policies and strategies, really looking more in this plan than we did in the past, what those strategies are for implementation compared to the policies. So where we want to go, based on the comments that we've received, is really trying to move from that kind of sprawling bedroom community to a more distinct, recognizable city with a sense of place. And so what are those key elements that go into that? First of all, we think it's focusing on neighborhoods. That will include the various topics of housing, revitalization, park, street, businesses, and other things along that line, really looking at neighborhoods and what it takes to make and keep great neighborhoods. We want to focus on economic development and jobs and look at those things that go together to help build a strong job base in the city. And I also want to concentrate on our public spaces, those areas that bring us together as a community, and look at how those are interacting with the other elements of the city. So, again, we're creating that more recognizable cities. And so then again, rather than looking at elements individually as we have in the past, we want to bring those together and look at them as a more consistent, holistic way, and how the neighborhoods and jobs and public spaces interact
and we really think where we see those areas really coming together, that's where we create those more vibrant urban type spaces such as downtown and other spaces like that we might recognize around the city. So that's led us to developing three guiding principles that we'll be using throughout the plan and relate everything back to. The first is to create and maintain a variety of great neighborhoods. Second will be to grow and maintain a stable, diverse job base. And third is to provide rich public spaces and cultural amenities throughout the city. So with those three guiding principles in mind, we are setting up the plan. This is the overall organization we have in mind for the new plan document and what it will look like. Section 1 will be a basic introduction. Section 2 will be the primary portion of the plan where we talk about these things I've just mentioned. I'll talk about these in a little bit more detail in a moment. But the character areas, which we've talked about a little bit before, the neighborhoods, jobs, and economy, and public spaces. Section 3 will be a little bit more of that traditional piece of the plan where we look at a lot of the city infrastructure that we do, but how they relate back and support realizing the overall three principles, and then administration section. So I'm going to step through quickly what we're thinking about for each of these sections so that you can see generally what we're thinking about, where we're headed. In the character area piece, we'll have a general introduction that talks about why character areas versus land use is an important way to look at it and help bring the community together. We'll have the overlay map or the overview map that I'll show you here in just a second and the basic characters. Then we have detailed descriptions of those characters. So this is the current version we have of the character area map. If you're familiar with our current land use map, which is very detailed in terms of what land use goes where, you can see this is a lot more general in nature, allowing more flexibility in development as it can occur over time. Most of the city is neighborhoods, although there are a variety of neighborhoods around the city. You also see that the edges are fairly soft on these, again, allowing for some flexibility and flow of where things can be. As we continue to work on this, as we've been talking to our Plan Advisory Committee and the Economic Development Advisory Board and gotten some of the input from stakeholders, you'll probably see in future maps that those areas that are in red on here, we'll probably have fewer of those. You can't see the pink ones quite so well on this map. They don't show up quite as well, but the pink areas, which are the neighborhood village centers, will probably see a few more of those and a few less of the mixed-use activity districts because we think that's what they'll really evolve into in the future. Some of those commercial strip centers have been built over time. Probably won't be so commercial in the future because we're probably overbuilt on those. And so we'll see some of the evolution. So we'll be looking at where it's appropriate to make some of those switches.
Well, will they not be more as commercial, or will you invite other uses to share the space with it? So perhaps you have a more intense use, but it's multi-purpose as opposed to simply being a drive-in strip center that can only be a strip center and only be commercial.
Yes, Mayor, that's exactly it.
Okay.
And the reason we're saying it's probably going to be more that neighborhood versus the mixed-use community is because the trade area is probably not going to be going out three or four miles. It's going to be that more 1 to 2 mile kind of trade area that will be supporting it.
Okay.
And so along with the character areas, and in each of these sections of the plan, we'll have probably a goal that goes with it, not a whole multitude of goals. And for the character, and these are drafts of goal statements that we're just starting to work with. But as I mentioned, we want each of these to relate back to three primary principles. So a draft of a goal statement for the character area is character areas would foster a development pattern that creates and maintains a variety of great neighborhoods, grows a diverse, stable economy, and develops rich public spaces. So again, relating back to those three primary principles. And as far as any policy statements here, our thought is that these should relate back again to the various character areas and how the character areas are being used to reinforce the overall plan objectives. And so I've just put three on here. Again, these are first drafts of what they might say. But we know from talking with some of the neighborhood representatives, they're concerned about being too flexible. And so what does that mean can really happen in my neighborhood? And so we want to make sure we're protecting the neighborhood so it doesn't get the incompatible uses. And also on the employment side, there's concern on the employment side that we'll be so flexible that our employment areas will transition into being residential areas. And we don't want that to happen either. The employment areas are very important to us in our future, and so we want to make sure that we're really focusing those and maintaining those. So these are the types of things we're looking at for the policy statements in this area. Next section, we'll be talking about the neighborhoods. Again, we envision a background that tells why it's important for us to focus on neighborhoods and the role they play in the community. Describe some of those key elements that help make up a strong neighborhood. Really trying to focus on what those positive things are and be able to point to those over time as development occurs and the things we're trying to create. And then as far as the plan piece, again, we're thinking there's one goal. The goal is to create and maintain great neighborhoods. We don't need to try to say it a lot of other ways. Again, I'm just throwing out here a couple of potential policies and strategies that we might develop under this section of the plan to help reinforce what we're looking for in the development of neighborhoods. Stable and diverse jobs, again, a similar format of background, why it's important for us to grow our economy and to keep working and developing jobs. Some discussion about what those key elements are for a strong, stable job base in the city, the main things that we're working on to create that job base. A goal, again, would be the same as the guiding principle. And then, again, a couple of ideas of what some of the policies and strategies would be in this section. And, again, similar thing on the public spaces where we have the background, key features, and then the goal of providing those rich, high-quality public spaces. And there'll be a few strategies and policies under that. From there, we'll move into Section 3 of the plan, which talks about the supporting infrastructure. The different types of topics we'll see in here will be primarily the city, different infrastructure pieces, such as utilities, public facilities, parks and rec. That's where we cover in more detail the transportation and transit elements of the plan. And in each case, we'll relate these back to the three guiding principles. So again, just for example, because I've got transportation and transit with me here today, in this section, again, we'll talk about the background, the relation to the three principles, and a general goal that, again, relates how transit is going to work to support the neighborhoods, the job market, and public spaces. And this may only need really one strategy because there is already be a transportation plan and a strategy of implementing that transportation plan. Again, we may have more things, but right now, as we're just starting to work, we know that would be a key. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Hash from Transportation Department to talk about the transportation plan and what they're doing. And then when he's done, Jody will talk about the transit plan, what's happening with that plan update.
Okay, so although the transportation plan isn't mandated by law, the same as the general plan is to be a standalone plan, it's still a integral part of that overall planning process when looking at the city. The transportation plan is over 10 years old. It was last updated along with the general plan in 2002. Updating the general plan concurrent with, or updating the transportation plan current with the general plan gives a holistic look through the window of the future of Mesa's transportation network and how it relates to the general plan and the vision of the city. Next slide. In keeping with these theme concepts of the three guiding principles, the transportation plan will look at those same guiding principles when it addresses the facilities and needs of the city in the unique character areas, transportation character areas throughout the city. Staff will also look at those three guiding principles and integrate those into all the elements that it updates as part of the plan update throughout the document. And finally, when you look at this slide here, in addition to the existing elements that are currently being updated by transportation staff, we also integrate two new elements into the plan, first being aviation and the second being a complete streets element. And the final element in the plan, or not the final, but one of the intricate elements of the plan is the transit plan, and Jody will talk about that.
The transit plan is going to cover pretty much four basic themes. We're going to work to develop transit priority corridors that will pretty much be along the same lines as John's, the corridors identified in the general plan. We're going to look to connect activity centers so that people can have maybe a more direct ride. Frequency over coverage, and that gets into Valley Metro's developing some standards and measures so we're consistent with the region on some of those. And to balance the local and regional transit needs, which is always a challenge in finding that perfect balance in there. There's several opportunities that the transit plan brings forward, and we have a lot of activities going on with the intercity rail project going from Tucson to Phoenix, and one of those corridors goes through the East Valley and how we'll play into that and manage that. Light rail, what happens light rail in the next 20 years after we get to Gilbert Road, which direction do we go? Do we continue east? Do we look at other corridors, maybe south? And then the bus areas, again, back to our transit priority corridors and working with those performance standards and measures being developed.
If I could talk to you a little bit about those transit priority corridors. I think, you know, when you look at our city, and basically a third of our city doesn't have regular transit. Everything east of most everything east of Power Road. There's a few little hooks into there. And I think developing transit, and I know you say transit priority corridors, I almost think we need to go the mile and treat transit corridors much like we do fixed route corridors, whether it be freeways or whatever. I think the idea that we can move transit to where everyone lives is not going to work. It's just not feasible. It's not financially feasible. It's not a smart way to do it. I think the idea is over the years that we establish transit corridors so that people will move toward the corridors much like they move toward a freeway or toward a light rail or things that are fixed. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but I think that's the way we're going to have to do it. And I think it's the best way to do it because it's the best way to truly affect development in the future to create these kind of development corridors that go along with transit corridors. So as we talk about transit priority corridors, I'd be interested to see how that develops because I'd almost like to see it be a little bit more fixed than that as far as saying, you know, we're going to not only make these a priority, these are places we're going to establish and almost work our plan, our general plan, around transit much like we do transportation and other things. Does that make sense?
Yes, Mayor, it does, and that's a discussion we've been having. It's a little bit of a chicken and egg, but we think that we do need to really identify, and that's why one of the character types on the character map is where we think those transit corridors are going to be because those will drive density then to those areas.
Yeah, you know, I think that needs to be one of our purposes because we simply can't afford, nor do I ever foresee any time in my lifetime that we'll be able to afford to take a bus or everything to every house. I mean, we've talked about some things that are simple, such as how we approve things like assisted living facilities, which we know, and that's just one example, which we know are high users of things like Dial-A-Ride. And to allow those to be built outside of a transit corridor just doesn't seem very smart to me when if you establish that, you say, listen, put it there so that we don't have to do Dial-A-Ride. You can walk out of the door and there's a transit corridor, there's a bus that goes by there, hopefully with more frequency, and gets you between those two connection points. I think that's something that we really need to be looking at going forward. Otherwise, we're going to continue to battle with this problem of not being able to provide transit to people who need it simply because they continue to build houses and build facilities in places where there is not going to be. I think we need to be honest with what the future of transit is. We're not going to have a bus within two blocks of everybody in the city. And something's got to give. And if we're going to provide transit, we have to also encourage development to move, especially higher density development, and those people need it to move closer to or adjacent to, it would be the ideal, to those transit corridors.
So the last section, again, we envision of the overall general plan would be the administration section. State statute requires we include a cost of development section. That will be in there. Minor and major amendments, what those are, and the process for those will be in that section. Review criteria for development. So we think this is something a little bit different, but we think it's going to be important with a more flexible character area. We need to develop some criteria that will help us review developments as they come in and how we compare that with the character of an area and what is appropriate for modification. And then also, we are envisioning that with the emphasis on strategies and the fewer things here, that we would come back periodically to council 2-3 years at the most and review the strategies and where we are and look for updates to those strategies because we know those do change over time. And by doing so, we'll keep the general plan more relevant for the day-to-day use of the various city departments and what's going on with budgeting and development of the city. So where we are, again, as I mentioned before, over the next couple of months, it's our goal to prepare a draft of the plan so that by the end of September, 1st of October, we'll have that draft ready for council to look at. And then from there, going out to the public. We anticipate going to the I-Mesa villages again the last of October, 1st of November, getting that kind of public input so we can take any comments we have, produce a second draft by the 1st of January, and then with that final draft, be able to go out for the 60-day review process and any other final public comment, and then that final public hearings through planning and zoning back to council a year from now for your action so it can be on the ballot in November 2014. Simple as that.
Councilman Richens.
I was excited to see a complete streets policy. It's something that we've been advocating for a while, and I know MAG's been working on standards for it and everything, and you know, it's amazing how often you walk around and see people, or drive around and you see people walking around the streets, and as you look at the complete streets policy, make sure, it would be important to make sure we consider shade and, you know, places of refuge for people. As you know, in the summer, it's pretty hot here, I guess. That's what they're telling me. But, you know, that'll be an important element as we go forward. Thanks.
It is.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Thank you.
Looks good.
Look forward to the next update. The next item is dear presentation, discuss provide direction for police-related towing services contract. G. I'd rather have a special meeting.
I brought backup.
We get the chief this time.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council Members. We're going to give you an overview of our towing services contract. Lieutenant Tom Entreri is going to do the presentation.
Good morning, Mayor Smith and Council, Mr. Brady and staff. Today I'd like to talk to you about the police towing services and our recommendation for a future contract. Our recommendation is a rotational list of vendors per zone, made up of three zones citywide. And one of the key aspects of this contract, which will differ significantly from years past, is that the pricing will be established by the city. This pricing is based on our current valley-wide municipal towing contract fees, and the pricing will be reviewed and adjusted accordingly as changes in the market dictate. The scope of this RFP is for the city to establish a rotational towing and storage service contract with multiple qualified contractors who will provide emergency and non-emergency towing services for a period of 1 year, with the city having the right to renew the contract for a period of 4 years. The work will consist of towing storage services for light and medium duty vehicles within the Mesa city limits or surrounding county islands. And the city may request these services to commence outside the city of Mesa, depending on need, such as task forces, investigations, so forth. Okay, here I'd like to display a map of the city and along with the zones and the boundaries that have been established. These zones have been dictated by towing volumes over the last several years. So we looked at it from a historical standpoint. And this gives us the most equitable solution for providing tow services and an equitable means of service through a rotational system. All three zones are within the low 30s in terms of percentage of our overall towing volume. To date, it's just slightly over 10,000 tows for fiscal year 12 and 13. Those numbers haven't been completely calculated yet, but they're right in that ballpark. So we're very comfortable with this map, this zoning system that we came up with. Lindsay being the east-west border, and Broadway will be the defining line for the western half of the city, north and south. So our idea here is to create an eligible vendor list through an RFP for towing services to support Mesa PD in our operations. The three-zone configuration will help us establish a vendor list for each zone. Up to six vendors per zone will be awarded a contract. And some of the key notes I'd like to point out is the essential qualifications for each vendor will be that they're able to provide three tow trucks, capable of medium and light towing per zone, and that the vendor themselves are located in the city or a county island adjoined to the city.
Does that include their storage yard?
Yes.
Okay.
1 year contract with the city established pricing again, and the vendors will be eligible for 4 1-year contract renewal extensions upon successful service. In addition to that,
I'm a little confused by that. So you anticipate at the end of like 5 years coming back and revisiting this, or I mean, what if they're still doing a job with? I don't get the 5-year limitation on this.
Basically, it'll be a 1-year contract. If they are meeting the needs of the contract, at the end of that 1 year, we'll renew for another.
At the end of 5 years, you'll go through a whole new process.
Possibly.
Oh,
that'll be. I mean, yes.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say that's...
Is that a possibly yes or a maybe yes or a yes, yes?
That's a yes, yes.
Yes, yes. Okay, gotcha. All righty.
Just going to leave that at your discretion. So...
I just did the timing. We'll all be gone. You do what you want to do. Let the nice council deal with this. Let them sit through five different towing things.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, the contracts will be awarded to individual contractors who will be placed on a rotational system in each zone. Contractors may submit for more than one zone. However, a contractor must be able to individually meet the essential qualifications for each zone. Up to six contractors per zone.
Which means, and I know this is a simple question, which means if they're going for three zones, they have to have nine trucks.
Correct.
And they have to, the location, all that would have to Correct. Be treated as though it's a completely separate deal
Exactly.
for each zone. Okay.
Yes. So here is the recommended pricing structure that we've been working on for the last couple of years. And we have refreshed this. We've revisited the market on a regular basis just to make sure that we were in line with what was going on. And we feel very comfortable and very confident that this fee structure is appropriate. Again, this will be evaluated on a yearly basis to make sure we meet the market needs. So here's
let me ask you this.
Sure.
Did you, in coming up with these pricing, did you talk at that time with anyone in the industry and go over with them, or is this something you just looked at the other ones and came up with and you're going to wait for input as soon as you put out the RFP, or how did that...
We have had some input from industry personnel. I know my staff did speak to some people on and off during this process over the last couple of years. And then we looked very heavily at other municipalities, both county, state, and local.
Okay.
Here in the East Valley as well as Valley Wide.
Okay. Councilor Richens?
Can you better define some industry input? What does that mean?
Well, I can't tell you exactly that everybody in the industry that's located within the city of Mesa was surveyed and spoken to about that.
Are they towing companies that currently service municipalities in
yes.
the valley? And
yes.
Was it a big number, a small number? Was it one? Just trying to understand what the scope of
I would
was.
Say I would be giving you a guess. Maybe three or four.
Who's the person who did that? That could be a little bit more definitive.
Paul?
Pardon?
How many vendors? How many vendors did we speak to? When we established the pricing?
Our local vendors are the ones that we currently deal with, but the majority of all that information came from other municipalities, the EPS and MCSO.
So
we, that slide right there, that one
surveyed. Yeah, we spoke with three vendors then, our current vendors, as well as these municipalities.
So really what we're talking about are fees that are permitted by the other municipalities for the towing companies.
Correct.
So frankly, it's information that's available based on that chart right there. Yeah. You surveyed. Now, this information has been shared with the current vendors today. Is that correct?
Yes. I did not personally, and I know that we have discussed it in forum before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mayor, Council, during this entire two-year process, we have every time we started with sending out to all the vendors that we had on our contract lists, do you like RFP idea? Do you like the rotational tow? What about fixed pricing? They've seen things like this from us before. As to this last one, as soon as we got this finalized, we sent it out to all the names on our vendor list too. This is something they've seen before and have been able to contact us with their opinions multiple times during this process.
I think what you're hearing a recurring theme, and this is not just this, it's in many other things, is that I think we can do a better job at formally engaging stakeholders before we come up with formal proposals, because they're going to get engaged one way or another. And I'll tell you, it's a lot easier to engage them as part of the process on a formal basis, as opposed to once we come out with a proposal, now all of a sudden we're scrambling, because they, believe me, they all call us and they all come in and they say, I was ignored. Now, I know that that's not totally true, and I know you've been talking to them. So that's why we're asking the question.
Yeah, so the question.
We want to make sure that people have seen this, you've gotten input, you've gotten their things. It makes this process a lot easier, I guarantee you. I see nods among my fellow council members. So it's always easier.
Yeah, Mayor and Council, let's clarify two things. I think we have expressed, and the industry has known, that we were going to recommend rotational for some time.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they all think that's a good idea.
Well, no, I didn't ask to get agreement.
So let's be clear on that.
Yeah, no.
And because there are not some would like to have a monopoly, some would like to be, you know, go back to the old RFP process, but we've gone round and round, and we felt like this was the most equitable position that allowed any variety from the largest towers to our local towers to have an opportunity.
Yeah, let me make it clear. We're not asking for buy-in from stakeholders or complete agreement. We're just saying, if we're going to do something, let's let them make sure that they know where we're headed and get their input and ideas so it can be formally factored into because you're making a proposal to us.
Right.
And we'd like to know that you've talked to the stakeholders or listened to them or gotten their input, whether they agree or not, so that we can then say, okay, this has been engaging and you've gotten input. And a lot of times it's the people who don't agree with it that provide the most important input. As opposed to when it comes out, then all of a sudden we're going to get that input anyway. So we'd at least like to know, hey, listen, you sat down with the police department, Chief Bombier, Dennis, everyone, and you know you had your day to give ideas. We took all those ideas, we looked at the other cities, and here's what we came up with. That's a much easier process for us am I wrong on that?
Mayor, can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Dina.
You guys, they're using the word equitable. And I don't know what we're talking about. Are we talking about equitable to all the towing people? Because I don't think the city council's responsibility is to business to make sure they make money or we're fair to everybody. We're looking for the cheapest rate for our citizens of Mesa. So I don't understand the word equitable.
So I think,
Mr. Bombier?
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, when I use the term equitable in this situation, I was thinking along the lines of we have reached out in a fair and equitable manner to all of the towing companies throughout this process. I would find it hard to believe that a set fee structure and the thought that we were going rotational would be a surprise to anyone. So we've been very diligent in making sure that each and every company that wanted to talk to us had a chance to talk to us.
And Mr. Mayor, if I may, that process in which you just described to us is the process that we did in this case. We have talked to the stakeholders multiple times over the time period of this process.
I've never found towing companies to be shy about telling you what they thought about the thing, so I appreciate that. Councilman Richens?
To me, it's the most important thing is the customer service experience, that our citizens of Mesa are getting improved customer service by this approach. So how does this improve customer service over some of the approaches we've taken in the past?
Well, one of the essential requirements of this contract is that they have certain signage posted so that the fee structures are posted in front of their businesses, so everybody knows right there what their costs are going to be, in addition to an audit process. So they're going to have the ability to contact us directly if there's any inequities, any concerns about the service itself. They can contact the police department so we can keep track of that and address them as need be.
They'll have a single point of contact for any problems. Also, one of the concerns about rotational systems in the past was confusion to the customer about where their car was actually taken. Yeah. How have we overcome that issue?
That's a good question. That is one of the problems with the rotational system. And our model will include a one vendor only per dispatch. So only one vendor will be permitted and dispatched to a scene at a time, to a location. That information will then be recorded in our CAD system. And that CAD system record will be tracked within the towing unit. So we will have that information. In addition to that, that information will be handed on to the customer at the scene in the form of what we call a tow slip.
So what happens when that company isn't available? Their rotation's up, they're already on another scene, they're not available.
We go to another vendor.
You rotate to the next
vendor? We'll go to the next vendor. If our list has been exhausted for that zone at that time, it's busy and we just keep calling different vendors to different scenes, and the next vendor up is not available because they're out on a different scene, then we will go to the next vendor in the list.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Vice Mayor?
Thank you. So what I've been listening for is, in the past, the police department has come with a recommendation over the several times over these years. And what I remember hearing them saying is, we do not like the rotational system. So what I've been watching for is what's different. What, you know, now that it is the police department's recommendation, what has changed? And a couple of the particulars are heard, and I appreciate Mr. Richens mentioning this, is the difficulty in managing it, the audit, you know, some of the tracking systems. So what has changed at the police department? Because we understand that we have a civilian unit, a lot of hard workers there doing good, you know, doing good work. But what has changed to make this the system to do at the police department?
Vice Mayor Finter. One of the things about the rotational system that proves to be in the benefit of the city and particularly the citizens is the competitive nature in service itself, meaning the multiple vendors, they're going to be judged based on their performance. If they know that they are competing with others based on performance alone, they're going to do their very best to service those customers as effectively and as efficiently as possible. Internally, in the past, we've discussed some of the challenges that the rotational system presents. We recognize those, we've identified those, and we have a way and a means to address those to make sure that this system can be very effective and efficient at the same time.
Do you have any details, maybe a couple of details, how you've addressed that and you have a new plan?
Our audit system has been in the past where we would go in on a monthly basis and do a random audit of vehicles per vendor each month. We plan on maintaining that. So for the most part, I don't see us changing a whole lot. We're very diligent in our audit process. I don't want to compromise that. So we're going to just move forward and really do our very best to make sure it works.
Mayor, if I could get in the queue.
Yeah, Gamps, Ms. Summers.
I didn't know if the Vice Mayor was finished.
Oh, yeah, he's done.
Okay. I just have a few questions.
Go right ahead.
Looking at the slides here, it seems that we're going to have up to six vendors per zone, and each zone they're required to maintain three trucks. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So have we looked at whether and asked them if they can maintain profitability, keeping three trucks at the ready for us in each one of those zones, if they're going to be able to, I mean, is that going to be affordable to them? Particularly the small companies, it seems that.
What was that? I didn't understand the question.
Council Member Summers, the reason for the three trucks is that the majority of our scenes will require one truck. But on occasion, we do have the need for two and up to three trucks. And in order to eliminate any concerns, any issues at the scene in terms of where a vehicle has been dispatched to, any issues between the vendors themselves in terms of whose response was primary, in order to eliminate that altogether, which has been historically the problems with the rotational system, we came up with three because we felt it was a very, very conservative number in terms of the needs to meet the requirements of this contract and the needs of the city.
Right. Our zones right now are we still have zones, right? And we bid out those zones currently?
Correct.
Okay. So how many trucks are they required to maintain each one of those zones? Is there a requirement for a minimum number of trucks?
I believe it's five.
They have to maintain five. Okay. Are these zones that we're going to are similar to the ones that we have now?
They are similar, yes. Okay. Zones 3 and 4 that we currently have will make up Zone C. Zone A is currently Zone 1. Zone B is currently Zone 2.
Okay. And the three-truck minimum, are they required to save those for our calls, or can they send them out on their own? So if the company gets a phone call from Mr. Richens saying that his car's broke down, he needs a tow. Can they send one of those three vehicles, or are those three vehicles only for contact by Mesa Police and Fire that they need a tow truck?
Those three tow trucks will need to be available to respond to the city's call. And depending on where they are on that rotational list at that time, that's a business decision that they'll have to make.
Well, okay. Let's be honest. I mean, they're not going to – tow trucks are going to use – they're going to tow and tow. They just have to prioritize. And when they get a call, they may have to choose to go one place or another. We can't expect them to have three trucks sitting there parked just waiting for the city to call, because they have a lot of other
business. And if they're not available, they just get passed on the rotation,
right?
Yeah.
Right, Mayor, and that's why I was asking about that three-truck minimum and how they came to that, because, there's a cost to those businesses to maintain those trucks and staff them. So if they're available only to Mesa Police, then my question is whether having those three trucks is going to be something that particularly a small business towing company is going to be able to afford to have them. I'm concerned about whether or not they'll be able to maintain their profitability, or if potentially we're going to be driving them out of business.
Councilmember Summers, they won't be required to have those tow trucks parked on the side of the road waiting for our call. Again, that's something that they'll be able to use those trucks for other needs. But what we're asking is that in the occurrence that we do need three tow trucks on a scene, that they are available to us at that time.
Well, it's just an allocation of resources.
I mean,
it's a capacity. And the other thing is that I don't think, once again, nobody's forcing any towing company to participate in this program. This is what we're saying is our minimum service level, because I agree with Councilman Richens that service is our number one priority.
Yes.
We want fair pricing. We want excellent service, which means we want tow companies to make money, because if they don't make money, they're not going to be able to service our customers. So we want a fair price, and we've set the price, and the towing company can decide whether they want to allocate the resources, their resources, to participate in this program or not. I would imagine that right now, if you're not in our contract and you're a towing company, you still have tows that you do. You still have the broken down cars and the things, the private tows, and they'll continue to do that. But for us to say we're going to call you, we want you to make the decision that you'll make available these resources. And if you have conflicting calls, you'll decide how to prioritize those. And we hope that if you want to do business with us, we'll be a priority at that particular time. If you don't want to, fine, don't participate. I mean, that seems pretty simple to me.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Mayor, I have another question.
Yeah, Councilman Higgins.
So there's a possibility of 18 total companies, 6 per zone and 3 zones. My question is, previously we were told that it's too expensive for the city to administer a rotational plan. So how much more was this going to cost in staff time than the current program?
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, at this point in time, we don't know exactly what the additional cost will be. That's one of the things we're looking forward to in the first year, is determining how this affects our ability to audit and monitor the contracts. But we feel comfortable in the first year we can handle that, and if that proves to be a burden that is much more than we thought, then probably when we go to the extensions, we'll have to try to find a way to address that issue. But we realize that is a concern from that standpoint, and we're right now prepared to address that.
Okay, one more question.
Go ahead.
The current fee structure that you guys showed in this chart, is this cheaper than what we are currently paying?
Councilwoman Higgins, it's not that it's not cheaper, because the current fee structure varies from zone to zone. So every zone is different. So depending on where you are in the city, you're paying a different fee.
And let's be clear, we don't pay these. This is correct. Charged directly to the person who's having their vehicle towed.
So, but my question was, if this isn't going to be cheaper for our residents, why don't we just continue with the contracts we currently have?
Go ahead,
Mr. Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, one of the things we think that really helps with this suggestion is the knowledge for our citizens that no matter where they are in the city of Mesa, if they get a tow, they're going to get a consistent cost, a consistent fee. They'll know exactly what they're going to have to pay. It will be posted. There'll be no more concern. The other huge advantage we get from this is when we have issues with towing with tows and consumers, we either hear about it up front with confusion about what happened at the accident, or we hear about it when they try to get their car back. This will help us, hopefully, by giving better signage and more consistent pricing. It will help us eliminate a lot of those calls for service, too, because we hope with this program it makes everything much cleaner and much more consistent for our citizens. We think that higher level of service is worth this type of proposed fee structure.
Well, and just to clarify, because I wasn't aware that actually low bid was what we were going after when we started this process. My understanding from all of our talk was service was a number one priority at fair pricing. We had complaints about inconsistent pricing. We had we had complaints about confusing pricing. We had complaints about, as you said, Mr. Pombier, changes and switches and alleged bait and switch and that kind of stuff. And what we were trying to accomplish was a pricing system that was fair. And looking at all the other communities, I see where you're low on some, you're right in the middle on others. So, I don't know how you determine which is the cheapest, because with each tow, it seems like it's an adventure in pricing a lot of time. But am I wrong to say that as I remember this from our last discussion, service was a huge factor, was the primary factor, which included consistency in pricing.
And Mayor, can I suggest something too? Is if you recall when we started this out in the RFPs and the responses we got from the tow companies about the pricings and how very different they were and the confusion, by keeping it this simple and having us dictate what that fee is, the auditing function becomes materially much easier because it's a formula. We don't have to go to each individual tow company's fee structure. We have one that's adopted through the whole city. So I'm hoping that will simplify the audit process, because regardless of who the tow company is and who's been towed in the city of Mesa, the formula should be the same. It should be very simple. And I think that's what we've tried to do through the last couple of years, is simplify the process so it's very known, very transparent for the customers, for us, as far as how we enforce it. And why are we doing this now? Well, frankly, we're on month-to-month contracts with the current vendors, and so we need to, the idea was to try to come forward with something that could be simplified.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I'm the scarred veteran of towing wars for all the through four terms. And I have to compliment you on the presentation, because it really, for the residents, I think for the companies and for the city, incorporates fairness, consistency, and credibility. And I do think the audit function will be simplified by the structure that you're proposing. I have been an advocate for the rotational structure. But I did appreciate the concerns that you raised, and I think what you've done, you've presented a plan that gives me confidence that we can have a system that creates greater access for companies to apply to be part of this. But the service to the residents is going to be the key, and I think it will eliminate many of the kinds of complaints you and your staff have had to deal with in the past. And I think the audit function will really fairly quickly help us identify where there are problem areas. So I want to compliment you on the presentation and the proposal, and I do support it.
Okay. Councilman Richens?
Could you walk me through a sample accident and what I would expect to pay with this fee schedule? So say, I got an accident, my car's been towed from Southern and Dobson to a tow yard some 4 miles away. It's going to be there for a couple of days. What do I expect to pay based on this fee schedule? Can you help me, understand what fees are going to come into play here?
So you're at Southern and Dobson, you'd be in Zone B. Now the initial storage, the initial 24 hours of storage, the hookup is all incorporated in that flat fee, the first 24 hours. So if you get your vehicle back.
So let's go back. So based on that, you have the accident, they come out. You have $30 is the base fee.
Correct.
Okay, so that covers your 24 hours.
Correct.
And the hookup and going to the yard.
Correct.
No so, matter the distance to the yard, I'm not going to get a per mile.
No, the per mileage will come into play if, say, for example, you're at the scene and you say, I don't want you to I'd prefer you tow it to this, to location B as opposed to your impound yard. If you wanted it towed
to your mechanics,
Councilmember Richens wanted it voted to towed to a body shop to get worked on. That's when the mileage fee would come in. So if the body shop was 6 miles from the scene, it would be an additional $30.
Councilman Richens, also just to clarify, most of the time citizens don't ever even deal with this fee structure. You have insurance, your car gets crashed, the car gets towed, your insurance company contacts the tow yard, and it all gets taken care of through the insurance industry. Where really these certain different fees come into play, you break down somewhere, a police officer comes by and says, hey, I can call you a tow truck. Tow truck shows up, but hey, I want you to tow it to my house because my neighbor is a wicked mechanic and he can take care of it. So you pay for the mileage instead of just the flat fee to the tow yard. So there's a bunch of different variables.
So if I'm just making that phone call on my own, I don't fall into this fee structure?
That's correct. If you just call your own tow company and don't involve the city, then we don't know anything about it.
So, Mayor, Councilman Richens, the only reason this is involved is because a police officer is on the scene, and part of this is the customer service. Is the customers, we're trying to get this police officer back on patrol, and so this is their ability to call. This is only when we call because we have an officer on the scene.
Correct.
That's trying to clear the accident.
So the only reason we're involved is we want to get our streets cleared as quickly as possible and our patrol officers back on
patrol. It's a scene that
a
police officer is involved in.
And if we don't say we let the insurance companies just handle this completely and we don't interject ourselves, do our intersections get cleared slower and our police officers get back on the beat slower?
Well,
if the private sector is just the only one that's taken this?
Well, when we say private sector, you're on an accident scene. Your car's messed up. Either we call a tow truck to get it, or what you're saying is, okay, it's up to you. Are you going to call a tow company right there when you're standing there looking at your car? I mean, that's really what we're talking about, right?
Well, we do it, yeah, because people get transported, they get hurt in collisions. We take on that responsibility to clear the intersection and to move it. Now, if you insist, if you're fine and you say, hey, you know what, I got USAA and I want to call them, you know, you can do that, but we need to clear the street.
Okay.
Vice Mayor?
And I'm trying to stay optimistic on this, having worked in a rotational system. And if you break out the pieces of this, you have the police department, you have dispatch, you have the seventh floor that's trying to find something that we can all agree on. The challenge being in rotational systems, and these folks are trying to, you know, operate their business as competitively as possible, is the phone call will go in, dispatch, you know, from the officer to dispatch, they'll hit the list. What I've seen in the past is that company on the rotation list will take it, and then in a few minutes they call back and say, hey, we don't have anybody, we can't get there, or they'll pass right as the phone call goes. Dispatcher moves to the next one. And it can be. So I love that Mr. Brady, you know, the goal is to get our officers, the intersection cleared, officers back in. What happens in some of these systems, and I'm just watching for how you're telling us you're going to deal with this rotational system, is pass, pass, pass. By the time you start passing through, and sometimes you might exhaust the whole list if there's been a spree of accidents and you have to rotate out to the next zone to come over.
Right.
So it gets time-consuming, and the goals that we're hoping to achieve don't happen. And I've kind of seen that. Literally, my dramatic example is in eye shot of a hospital doing CPR, ambulance pass, pass, pass. We finally put the person on the tailboard of the fire truck and drive them to the hospital. I've had to do that. And so when you feel those kind of things, you go, sometimes that rotational list doesn't work as efficiently as we'd hope. So just off, but I'm optimistic that we're trying to get to a good place. So, yeah.
Mayor, if I could build on that, The other concern is that they don't want to pass, even though they don't have a vehicle nearby, and they end up sending one from across the city, and so the response times start to creep up. Is there a response time requirement in this agreement?
Yeah, Mayor and Council, I believe that's built into our
25 minutes.
Yeah,
and how's that different than now?
So
we have standards now.
So
we have standards
if someone's not performing, if they keep passing, they don't show up on time, right, they probably aren't going to get renewed. And so, you know, in the difficulty that we think this actually, the benefit of this is it brings more backup options than we have today. So at least it gives us a diversity of others that we can call from to use. But there is performance requirements, and if those aren't met during the term of the first year, they would be dropped.
Well, I'm assuming this is a one-year term to begin with.
Correct.
I'm assuming that during that one-year term, you're going to be monitoring performance because, as the Vice Mayor's pointed out, you have as much interest in burdening your staff, your dispatch staff, and getting officers back in. The customers have the interest, and we can revisit, we can see how this works in the visit and in the year. I'm assuming we'll have some pretty good data to see, gee, is this working as we anticipated? Are there problems? Do we need to go back? I mean, isn't that
correct,
sort of how we could do it?
That's exactly what's going to happen.
Because otherwise we're talking hypotheticals. We're talking different scenarios, and I know there's experience, but it's not specifically as it relates to this. Because once again, I think what the fixed pricing does is it has a tendency to filter out real players and other players. I think it appears that you've got pricing that, based on comparison with other cities, towing companies can be profitable doing this because they seem to be within the parameters of what others are doing. If they're not, I'm sure we'll hear from them and we'll ask about these fees. If they don't want to play the game, they don't bid. They don't propose. If we don't get enough proposals, then we'll have to go back and say, you know, what is lacking that has not attracted the marketplace to get this contract. If after a year we're finding that it's their service issues, we can adjust it. Councilman Richards?
Are the other cities using this fee structure, using the same rotational system we're proposing here, or do they use this fee structure with a flat rate single vendor?
I could tell you that no two cities work under the same system. There is a variation of systems across the board. There's a variation of audit processes if an audit process exists across the board. So we've taken everything based on our research and our contacts and the information we've gathered. We've tried to come up with what we believe is the best process for us in order to accomplish our goal, which is providing excellent customer service and protecting the public safety by clearing those streets of those vehicles.
Yeah, I understand that what I've heard, and I may be wrong, that there's everything from a complete rotation, an all open, wide open rotation, to a single vendor
city
monopoly.
Yep.
And everything in between.
Yes.
Yes, sir. And this approach that we've gotten to over the last almost 2 years now was at your behest to change what we had done at the industry input. Where we've gotten to today is what everyone together has put into the pot, and the Traffic Bureau has tried to come up with the best solution to fit everybody's needs. So that's where we are today, and that's what we're trying to provide. And as you predict, if something goes wrong during the first year, we won't renew a contract. If this thing just becomes too cumbersome, we'll come back to you and ask for a change. But this is, at the request of everybody, the best of what we think we have today to offer.
Well, and let's put it in context, too. I mean, the Vice Mayor points out an example with the ambulance where time critical, I mean, you're talking life and death situations. This is, you know, we're looking for an optimal situation, but if there's an extra 5 minutes or 10 minutes, it's not a life and death. It's an inconvenience. It's not the most efficient use of our resources. But the fact is that we're not as completely time sensitive in towing as we are in other areas.
Correct.
Where there's a patient pickup or things like that. So we have a little bit of leeway to see what works best.
Yes.
I would assume.
Yeah. Mayor Smith, just to concur with you, the points you brought up as to some of the thought process that went into this in terms of the system and being able to reevaluate it after a year is exactly what we had in our discussions. Again, when we talk about the urgency of clearing the roadway, sometimes it's very much location-based as well. So Country Club and Southern, we certainly want an expedient response. A side street, you know, at 3 a.m. because it's an abandoned vehicle or broken down for one reason or another, or it's the result of an arrest, is a different scenario altogether. So, but we do have performance measures placed in there that the vendor is able to respond within 25 minutes 90% of the time.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Just a quick procedure. So we're having this discussion. Or is this going to be something that comes back in a vote, or are you just going to take direction from us here and kind of proceed? How does that work?
Yeah, I believe, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council, we are looking, we need to get some direction to move forward so we can put this, move forward with this process. Once we have this process in place, if we have
the RFP account, process.
This is not an RFP process, really. It's just an eligibility list.
Well, RFI,
yeah.
RFQ.
And so once we have the eligibility list, then we would enter into those agreements and move forward. I think
I guess
that
it would be a RFQ, which I will deposit my quarter request for qualifications.
So, because I think where we've come through in all this process is in the past where we tried to pick, do through the RFP process, really we got into this point of, good, better, and best, where you could have three or four that could actually provide the service, but because someone, was providing 12 trucks in a zone or, or their pricing, we're trying to distinguish the pricing and they all had different variables in the pricing. We really try to simplify this process so it really becomes an eligibility list. So we could say that even if you're a large, very, very large company, you can provide the service, but even if you're a local vendor and you still have sufficient resources, you can also provide those services. So that's what we're trying to get in that scale while keeping it simple and moving forward. So I think what we would, if we can get the direction, what we need to do then is begin the process of going out and soliciting and gathering the proposals to determine the, was it five or six?
Six.
Six eligible vendors for each of the zones. And that's
we have to determine if there are six under our.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Councilman Richens.
Let me understand the range of potential companies we'll be dealing with. So, because I keep hearing the word simplifying it, streamlining it, making it more simple. And so we will be dealing with a minimum of six companies and a maximum of 18 companies. Because one, presuming
there is
one,
yeah,
so
if
all six vendors were able to participate in all three zones,
correct.
Is that?
I think the reality, I think when we did the RFP process for all the zones, I can't remember what the total number, but it wasn't 18. It was much less than that.
I mean, if we want simple. One company is simple, But
well, I guess it is. But the problem is getting to that point of determining who is the one company,
right?
And then you have to go through a competitive, process for an RFP, and you're evaluating. And do you want to select just one company for the whole city? And have that.
I just don't want to get sued anymore by towing companies.
Frankly, that's why we're proposing this option as an opportunity, that there's a variety of eligible vendors that instead of trying to pick winners and losers, like would a requirement of a monopoly for the city would require one large winner and several losers. We suspect that would be a very difficult, challenging process to come up with that solution. So I think this is a conversation in the direction we got from council where you, after going through that and going through the traditional RFP process, the feedback we got was, let's change this. Can we do something else? We went and looked at the lottery option. We determined that wasn't going to work, and this became the next best option after getting the feedback from council over the last couple of years.
Okay, so I guess the direction would be you've made your proposal. I guess the next thing is to get direction from us whether to proceed now with soliciting interest from based on what you've done.
And then we would enter into those agreements
formal
and move
interest
forward.
And then get us up to date and tell us, okay, here's what we've got. I'd like to hear.
Well, absolutely. We can do that.
Yeah, and see what we've got coming back. All right. Objections to moving ahead on that thing, or do you want to take a formal action? Does everyone understand what we're talking about? So we have a proposal from the police department to move ahead and solicit requests for qualifications based on the parameters that they've laid out here.
If we get the direction to move forward, we will go through the process, determine the eligibility per zone. We will then prepare the documents, begin to enter into those agreements. We'll share that information with council. It doesn't necessarily take your vote as a service contract, but just like with service contracts, we would inform you of that decision.
So, well, what I'd like to hear, just and doesn't need to be fancy, is that as you put out that RFQ, what's the response you get
from
qualified parties?
So we can give you a different
sense. Is it 18 companies? Is it three companies that, do we have others that just sit out and say, I hate rotation, I'm not going to do it?
Okay.
I mean, I've had towing companies that say, I absolutely want rotation. I've had towing companies say, if you do rotation, I'm not going to participate.
So I've heard it on both ends. If we do the solicitation process, come back with the responses, and before we make a formal decision, we will share that with you, Council.
Councilman Kavanaugh?
given the legal challenges we get with everything we do with regard to towing, I think it might be better to more formalize the direction that we're doing. So I'm making a motion that we provide staff direction to proceed with their recommendations on soliciting the responses to their proposal.
Based on the proposal presented to us?
Yes,
today.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We have a motion then. Do we have a second? So what's your alternative?
I don't know. Part of me is, I just think I need to study a little bit longer in my mind. I'm still a little unsettled talking to, I think I want to talk to staff a little bit. Maybe we could revisit this next Thursday after we've had an opportunity to visit.
We don't have it next Thursday.
We don't, or the week after. Are we the that? I mean, we've been,
it probably,
when's the next meeting that we have?
July 1st.
Yeah, I would agree with Councilmember Richens.
It's a shock.
We just got this week and really didn't have enough time to chat and visit with anybody about it.
Okay, can I gently suggest the council? This is not the first discussion we've had on this program. I think we've gone over in detail, it's probably the fourth discussion we've had on three zones, fixed pricing, rotation, and those kind of things. And so if you avail yourself to understand the real process, because I know it's been a while, we have to renew the deal, but we shouldn't be starting from scratch on this.
How about we go ahead and let them start the process, paperwork process, to get everything in place, and then before they're ready to launch on that, that'll give us plenty of time to be able to review. So in regards to Dennis's motion, I'll go ahead and second it, but before this hits the street, that should give me plenty, and Councilmember Higgins, plenty of time to go through any more outstanding details and kind of get settled about it a little bit more.
Well, that sounds like sort of an amendment to me. Are you offering up an amendment to the motion?
Well, no, it's not. It's not. That's going to build Councilmember Higgins and I in a period of time that we can continue to gather more information and make sure that we're settled on this approach.
Okay.
But I see no reason why they couldn't go forward with putting together the, preparing the packets and everything that you're doing.
All right. So we have a motion and a second.
I'm confused because I don't know what has to come back for us to do. And
that's why
I think, and the reality is.
Oh, he's not asking to come back. He just,
no, I'm just
think
to
he was,
move ahead.
Yeah, I think he was just asking staff to sit down so he makes sure they understand it. And my guess is that if there's
a problem or concern, we can come back and ask it to be placed back on the agenda.
I think that's what it is. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Can
you say it again? I didn't hear what you just said.
I think he's supporting the motion to move ahead with the process, but if any of the council members have additional questions, it gives them time to look at what the process is and going back down. And, of course, then those council members could come back to us, presumably with
before the RFP goes
out and request to be put back on an agenda for some kind of action.
Why don't we do this? We'll move forward. However, maybe we'll wait a week or two, a week before we actually send out the, we're calling it RFQs, the eligibility requirements.
Are you ready to go right this minute?
Yeah, we could go next week, but why don't we wait another week after that?
That would be fine.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins, are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's okay, Mayor.
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. If there's any more questions or discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins and...
Yes. Aye.
You vote both with aye? All opposed, nay?
Yeah, I'm aye.
Nay? Are you an aye or a nay? Okay. The vote is 6-1 with Vice Mayor Finter nay. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you very much. Item 1C here, presentation, discuss, and provide direction on a proposed future capital improvement program.
Mayor, as Candace comes up, let me just share with council the idea that, and we talked a little bit about this last time we brought this, we discussed some of these projects. We have provided a variety of lists to council, I think, over the last couple of weeks. The departments had came and made several presentations to the council. As we were considering the opportunity to move forward with a future bond package, For us, it was, we had to recognize, I think, a couple different things. One, the timing of doing an election now, obviously recognizing this is not in the current election cycle. And two, also being concerned, as it has been expressed by a variety of council members, about the fiscal impact of a bond package, and recognizing that we're still in a recovery mode in the economy. And so as you see the list before you, and the list, or even the list previously I should speak to, there's a lot of important projects on there. And the fact that they didn't make our critical list, I want to make sure everyone understands, is not, we're not suggesting that those projects are not important. It became a determination of projects that probably needed to be done in the next 2 years, and projects that also we could scale to try to keep it within a value that would have as minimal impact fiscally on the secondary property tax levy as possible. So that's what you see before you. And we also looked at projects, obviously, that are having an impact on our maintenance budgets, projects that we felt like the continuation of them, as far as projects that are already started and continuing them, would be important, and providing opportunities to leverage economic development opportunities in the future. So, again, I don't want just there are a variety of projects that were on the some earlier list. I don't want anyone to believe that we're suggesting those are not important. We would hope that if not all, but many of those projects would be included in a future bond package in the next couple of years, if that council were to agree to do that sometime in the near future.
Okay, thank you. Candace.
So on that note, what we have today is really just coming back and continuing our discussion that we had started on Monday, and coming back and talking about the different categories of projects, of potential projects for a possible 2013 bond election. Some changes that we have made, we received some feedback from council on Monday as part of that discussion. We have gone back and looked at some of those items and come back with a slightly revised list based on that feedback. The slightly revised list includes increasing our arterial reconstructs that we talked about by a couple million dollars to work on some of projects that were identified by council as streets that needed some additional repair or review. So that was, the original number was $25 million. We have bumped that up to $27 million. Other changes that we've made in the streets area is the neighborhood and safety area. We did have the continuation of Mesa Drive included in our previous number, but it did not include capacity improvements at the Broadway-Mesa Drive intersection. We have included those capacity improvements, so that number has gone up from $10 million to $14 million. That would bring our total streets potential projects to $78.8 million. On the public safety side, the communications category has not changed since our Monday discussion. However, due to the feedback we received during that Monday discussion, we have made adjustments to the police and the fire categories. In the police category, we have included the holding facility improvements that were discussed on Monday, as well as the hardening of the shooting range site there. And then for fire and medical, we have not changed the fire apparatus. However, we did receive feedback to go back and look at that particular program for the fire apparatus and the timing. We looked at two different things. One, we believe that looking at what a possible future election would be, if we were to come back and do another future election, say about 2016, we think we could reduce that fire apparatus down by about $5 million, down to about a $10 million package versus a 15, if we knew that was on the horizon or thought that would be. The other item that we've looked at is we were asked to look at the possibility of leasing apparatus versus the actual purchase of that. We did have time to go out and look for some leasing possibilities. And when the results on that is it would actually be to our benefit to buy with the bonds than it would be to lease. It would actually cost us a little bit more to lease the equipment than it would be to actually purchase them outright, including the financing of the bonds. That would bring the public safety package up to the $35.8 million if the fire apparatus stayed at the original $15 million mark. Another project that was identified.
Getting back to leasing, I mean, my experience has been that leasing, especially of equipment, people lease for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. You lease either because your use of equipment is intermittent, and therefore it doesn't make sense for the capital expenditure, or you don't have the ability or don't have the desire to go into debt. Either way, leasing is more expensive. It always is because you're buying convenience or you're buying the ability to get capital or capital items where you don't have the ability to borrow those capital items. And so you pay a price for that. So it's not surprising when we have consistent use, clear through the useful life, that it would be more expensive. Now, sometimes that's to the advantage because the use patterns and everything mean that you're willing to pay that premium to do that. But you see, the leasing companies are actually paying a higher rate capital cost mm-hmm. to buy the equipment to lease to us than we're paying.
Right.
Correct.
Plus, and they have to make money off that. So it's not surprising that a lease for the type of equipment that we're going to use on a daily basis would be more expensive than purchasing outright, especially mm-hmm. at our borrowing rates. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I just wanted to compliment you for listening to the input the other night on those issues. In terms of the public safety, I do think that it's important for council to consider the critical nature of a couple of other fire projects and hopefully arrive at some consensus. I've been working on the issues related to communications probably since 1998, both here for the city and then nationally in the cities. And there's no question, there's no doubt in my mind that the request for the communications building with fire, I know that's a top priority. We've talked about that in my committee for the past 5 years. And the VHS system improvements, again, are critical in terms of needs for our public safety activities. So I'm hoping that other members of the council might share my view that those should move into the current proposal now. I really think we are creating increased risk to our firefighters and to the community for delaying those yet again. Thank you.
Okay. I guess before I could decide on that, I've always been confused as to I just don't have the information. The ability to provide services in an existing facility or through an existing building that's somehow expanded as opposed to a completely separate building. I haven't had the information to explain why a separate building would be the preferred or the most cost-effective or even the only option. So if we're going to consider that, if maybe I could get a little bit of briefing and update as to why we would have to go into a completely separate building, which I think would be much more expensive as opposed to either expanding or retroing or something like that. Vice Mayor? Oh.
Well, I'm glad to hear the mayor say that. Well, let me tell you what I've been talking to Mr. Bloom, Chief Bloomer, and others behind the scenes. You need to come with a plan that is a reuse or a redevelopment in an area of the city that's challenged. Don't, you know, the plan should not be a brand new built, you know, bricks and mortars out at Gateway, in my mind, is we ought to get a two or a threefer out of these kind of things under a different power grid for all the right reasons. Come in and here's my example that I would give to them. Find a thing in either Westwood area or Fiesta area. Don't tell them you're the city coming in. Grab that old nasty big box building that's sitting there vacant, retro it or reuse it. Put a dog park on the front. We win in about five different ways. We get that retail out of the market of that blank space, and that's a winning proposal. Then you come in, and then everybody's on board. So that's what I've been hitting these guys behind the scenes with, and obviously do it at an efficient rate. So I'm supportive. If somebody can come up with a plan like that, I'll be the person to lead it and, you know, do whatever we can do. But I'm hoping that's kind of what the mayor was saying in some parts. But
Councilor Kavanaugh?
And I have a lot of candidates for locations for reuse, particularly in the Fiesta District, as Vice Mayor knows. No, and again, the reasons are you need the redundancy. You need to have the separate power grid. You have that microburst tornado that hits our existing communication center, dispatch center. That's why you want to be at a separate location on a separate power grid, so that your communication system has capacity and redundancy. Because again, I do know that when our system goes down or has challenges, it puts a tremendous strain on Phoenix dispatch to cover what we need here. So I think the Vice Mayor has a great idea. You know, this doesn't have to be a new building, but I think there are a lot of other opportunities where you can adaptively reuse space that has the needs for what exactly we're talking about. Thank you.
Okay. And along with the building, I need more information as to why the redundant. I mean, I get the redundancy. Redundancy is always good. The question is whether the cost of redundancy, the price of redundancy, whether the risk of the catastrophic event merits the cost of redundancy. I mean, I just need more information on that because the discussions so far have been somewhat on the surface, and I don't think anyone, if you said, gee, redundancy, it's like, yeah, mom, apple pie, and the American flag. Of course, if you can have two to back up, that's always good. The question I would have is, what is our risk of a complete catastrophic failure? I know we've had some downturns for hours and this and that. The question is that merit the cost that it would take to create that redundant system? I'm not saying it does or doesn't. I just don't know. So I think there's valid points as far as the physical nature of it, and then also the need operationally and otherwise for what we would call a redundant system. And I've heard of different arguments that it's not even the redundancy that is the driving factor as much as it is that our public safety has evolved to the point that we really need to move to more of a big city approach, where you have more of a, I don't want to say separate, but in many ways it's a separate with very distinguished police and fire, and I know that many large cities do it that way. Is that the driving factor? Because, you know, this discussion has been somewhat, to me at least, blurred by the fact that, is it redundancy, or is it the need and the desire to move to a different operational model? Is it a combination of the two? Is it the need for a physical site? It's just sort of confusing for me. And once again, this is, I think, falls into the deal that Mr. Brady said. I get it that long term this is something that we want to move toward, and I would support that, even with what I've learned. I think that it's something that is part of the natural evolution of being the big city, not only our big city, but we are the centerpiece, and even with a regional system, we will continue to be a centerpiece of whatever system we're in, whether it's our sub-region or whether it's the overall region. We'll play a significant role just because of the sheer size of Mesa and our department and of the Southeast Valley. But if we could sort of try to narrow those down and find out, because this may be something that, to do it right, is something that we may not want to do it now and rush into it. We may want to, as part of the ever-evolving discussion, and I think we are moving to the point where we will be part of a regional system. Is this part of that? I'd almost rather do it right and wait a year or so than rush into it. Or do we have to have it now? That's something that I'm not really clear on. So if fire, whoever can give me that, sit down with me over the next couple of weeks and feed me, I'd feel more comfortable. Maybe other members of the council through the public safety, you already have that information. I don't.
Mayor.
So, yeah, Councilmember Summers.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt.
I was done.
It's difficult being on phone. I can't see you.
You're lucky.
What's that?
I said you're the lucky one.
Oh, you should have seen my face talking about towing contracts. But it's essentially, you answered the question. The communications is changing and evolving, and the nature of the service is changing and evolving as well. It truly is a regional system. It's not just the city of Mesa, but there are several other cities that rely on us for their communications. Communications itself used to be a discussion of voice communication on the fire ground. It's evolved well past that to data communication, and data is what's really driving much of the need for a new facility. And what will happen is, kind of like what our discussion about the fire trucks, we approve the fire trucks, it still takes a year to put these things into service. When we approve the data, the communication center, it's going to take some time to put that in the service, and these changes are here, and they're now. So I think we need to get our questions answered for the entire council on how we would put this together, whether or not we could do a reuse, why we need a new building, or if we could repurpose an old one. But the conversation really needs to look at the nature of communications in the emergency services, the nature of our regional agreements, how important communications are in this environment, and realize that if we delay the project out, part of the problem is going to be by the time we do decide to make the investment, we are going to be well behind the eight ball even more, because it's going to take time to build that structure and put the infrastructure in place. So I would hope that we would take a look at this as an important investment and seriously consider starting to make that investment here in the next bond.
Okay. So if you could follow up and maybe fill in the thing, we'll be able to, in a couple, 3 weeks, probably make that decision.
We'll go ahead and do that.
The next thing I've got is on the Spring Training Museum. This is put out, and I would assume that what the proposal would be is that we have three separate questions on the bond issue.
Yes, Mayor and Council, and also I need to amend this after visiting with Lisa Anderson and maybe having a better understanding of the needs of a museum. That estimated cost, I think the two of us now agree, should be $17 million as opposed to the $15 million. But as to your question, at this point, if this were included, there would be three separate questions. So it would be the questions for a question regarding public safety, a question regarding
streets,
and then one regarding, I think we'd call it a...
Cultural economic development. We're looking for a title.
We're trying to find the right term that we can use on the ballot. But
I mean, we've been doing projects out of our economic development, kind of an economic development bond fund. We've used that terminology, the same term we've been using for the spring training stuff, you know, noting that there's specifically in this business plan that I've reviewed that there's a return on investment associated with that. That would pay that fund back, just like other projects like Benedictine and some of these other projects. And so if that's truly the approach, shouldn't we be framing it the same way as we do those deals?
What we're speaking to is not necessarily – within the Economic Development Fund, we call it whatever label we want, because we're paying cash for those projects that came from the savings of a refinancing. When we go to a ballot, we have to have it – focus under a specific question.
I think what the question was is it why would this be in a bond as opposed to taking the same approach?
Yeah, I mean, do we need to do this one in a bond? Can we do it through that economic?
Is it the best way to do it through a bond? And
that would just be a question of priority within the Economic Development Fund.
I'm speaking on your behalf, so...
No, I'd really love to explore that, because I think this is...
Why don't you come back to us with that?
What I've seen is a great proposal, and it's mm-hmm. and this spring training museum approach has been very popular, and I think that the folks that are proposing this with the museum have done a really good job comparing it to other venues across the country that have paid those, you know, that have borrowed money to launch and have paid that back very quickly. I was really impressed with the due diligence they did, so I think it's worth the evaluation.
Sure. There's not $17 million in cash in that fund today with all the obligations we have.
Right.
So, not.
Well, why don't you put it into context and tell us what the capacity is through the economic, because I think this is different. Once again, we anticipate, and the reason that I'm interested, and I'm assuming other council members would be interested, is the fact that this, as Councilman Richens said, has the potential to generate economic activity that will pay for itself. And generally, GO bonds, let me back up. Since we have an economic development activity, can we maybe include this type of thing in there so it is a regenerating type of an activity? And I think you just need to look at it more closely and come back what the numbers are.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The money's not there, it's not there. If it's there, then... maybe part of it's there.
Okay.
Maybe we do some other things. That sound?
Yeah.
Did I do a horrible job of
No, I mean, there's more than one way to approach this. And
I've always said there's more than one way to skin a cat.
That came to mind, but I decided to not say that. Because every time I say something about cats, I get emails from animal activists, and I don't want that.
Oh, yeah.
So there's nothing about skinning cats today.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe part of it is done through the Economic Development Fund. Maybe part of it needs to be bond finance. Maybe we need to go into the private equity markets.
That's one thing that hasn't been explored in this, since this is part of the Wrigleyville West development, is the potential for private development
private
participation.
Right.
We may have to commit and then go out and get that or later, but I think that might be an essential part of this.
Yeah, I mean,
I
love the proposal. I think what I'm saying is I love the proposal. I think it's worthy and merits further exploration from a financing standpoint of how to get there.
Okay.
And to do that sooner than later.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Well, I love this, how it's coming out. That's, you know, good information. The only piece I would ask, and since it is a spring training experience, the museum, we now have two teams in the city, and I don't know, maybe I didn't have a chance to get this information. So where's the best place to put that utilizes, you know, both teams, two different sites? I don't know. There's probably a lot more input in
that. I think we need to be a little careful about attaching it to any particular team because we want this to be a spring training, Major League Baseball, very broad approach, and if we get too invested with one of the teams. I love the Riverview site for this. I think that would be the one that has the most potential for generating success, but certainly we can...
No. And that was the question I'm asking. Since we have two teams, you don't tie it to any one. Do you find that neutral spot? And the thought process that came through is you have all the museums. We're trying to get a synergy downtown. Do you find that spot, light rail access, others? And I'm sure there's different ways to look at it. So.
And I think if the long-term plan actually is more baseball than it is, and the history of baseball, including potential hookups with national type of museums as opposed to one team or even spring training. The idea is to expand beyond baseball so that it's a year-round experience and it becomes something that baseball fans will, you know, come and visit, and it will add to the 12-month year. So maybe in the next couple of weeks if we could fine-tune this a little bit. And we understand that we may have to make a decision before we have all the answers on this. I think these are things we need to answer because these are questions we're going to be asked. Mm-hmm. By the public if we're going to move forward on this. And so I'd rather have them before we approve it than be scrambling afterwards. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, and I appreciate the support that we're hearing. I do agree with Councilmember Richens that probably the optimal site is Riverview, whether it's east or west of Dobson, just because of the transit access north, south, east, west. And because it would be a year-round attraction, I think it would also provide more opportunities for the hotels that we're talking about to succeed at that location as well. So I'm very pleased that we're going to move ahead and continue the discussions on this.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think before we get together in a couple of weeks, we're going to get more information on...
Let's go to that. Yes, go ahead.
On the communications.
Yeah, so let me look at... let me show you what the calendar is.
Well, that would
that's
be
coming
for July
up.
1st.
Right. For okay. July 1st, yeah. We'll maybe start a little bit early on that. But that's before the council meeting. I mean, that's the first time we have the agenda to go through. So maybe we do a little bit of an early start on the study session. And on this one, we're going to revisit
communications with the building as well as
building.
The museum.
And then the museum.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And by then, maybe you'll have a little idea of how it would be presented on the ballot, too. Maybe not specific wording, but at least how we do that. Okay.
Well, we'll probably have the specific wording because the following week
is when we have to.
You have to approve it. So we kind of like a draft. You'll see that draft agenda on the 1st.
All right. So. Is that okay with everybody? All right.
So we have those two meetings left. So July 8th was when you'd have to actually call the election if that was to go forward.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Any reports? None. Oh, wait. I skipped something. Information pertaining to current job order contracting projects. Is that's in our packet? Any questions on the information presented to us? Okay. Then, Mr. Brady, scheduled meetings.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, we just talked about it. Our next meeting will be July 1st, and we'll provide that. Get the information about the early start for that. Also, a reminder tonight, the Friends of Transit in Valley Metro will be hosting a free mixer from 4:30. To 7 p.m. At the De La Cruz Bistro here in downtown Mesa. So we want to invite everyone there. It's a way to, again, show support for our businesses on Main Street as they're going through construction activity. Also, coming up a week from this Saturday, June 29th, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m., we'll be having, in downtown Mesa, we'll be having the Arizona Celebration of Freedom. We invite everybody out. It's a free event. The fireworks show is... scheduled for approximately 9:45 p.m. But before that, there's a tremendous amount of activities, entertainment, booths from a variety of different vendors. Also, this year we're encouraging individuals to support the packages from home. We'll be collecting 3 packs of white T-shirts to send to individuals who are in the military. Also, July 1st, there will be an audit and finance committee meeting at 3:30 p.m.
And this year we're extending the Celebration of Freedom by an hour, too.
Oh, 6 p.m.
Yeah, so we'll have music and everything for about an hour past the fireworks, up till 11 o'clock. I know last year fireworks came and it was like, okay, go home now. People were... I was going to say, we've already granted it to us, to ourselves. no comment. All righty. Ms. Mickelson, any requests to speak from the public?
No request, Mayor.
Entertain a motion. I have a motion from Councilmember Glover, a second from Councilman Cavanaugh in executive session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are moving into executive session. Thank you.